Welcome to session two of our series, The Audacity of Jesus, how Jesus defied convention and invites us to do the same. Recent studies on volunteering and giving have demonstrated that doing some act of kindness for another person activates pleasure centers in the brain, increasing the likelihood that others will do some good and actually improves longevity and overall emotional and physical health. But we don't need a psychologist to tell us just how good for us doing good for others can be. Those moments in our lives when we've had the resources to give to a struggling family, a little extra cash, or support victims of some natural disaster make us say, I wish I could do that more often. Churches in America actually do a pretty good job of helping people. Overseas relief and development from American churches exceeded $13 billion in 2009 as one example. But it's a lot easier to write a check than it is to welcome someone into your home. As much as we don't like to admit it, some Christians prefer to be around people who are like them and most probably do so exclusively. Many of us don't take much joy in allowing people that are different violate our personal space. As much as we enjoy the feeling and the idea of doing good to others, we allow a monetary sacrifice to ease our guilt over failing to provide a healing touch to someone who looks, thinks, votes, speaks, or parties different than we do. And it even happens within the church. We break into tribes and limit ourselves to people within our own age, marital status, or temperament, because we believe we will be better understood when we are close to people like us. So even churches, which tend to fill up with people who already look a lot alike and make similar amounts of money, end up dividing along all sorts of social boundaries. And what complicates the matter further is that the Bible often promotes disassociation. Consider these verses. Walk with the wise and become wise, for a companion of fools suffers harm. Or stay away from a fool, for you will not find knowledge on their lips. Another verse in Proverbs says, like a muddied spring or polluted well are the righteous who give way to the wicked. I do not sit with the deceitful, nor do I associate with hypocrites. I abhor the assembly of evildoers and refuse to sit with the wicked, Psalm 26:4 says. Social boundaries and religious restrictions can keep us from providing a healing touch to someone across the aisle. We're going to explore how Jesus healed people in the face of these challenges. Spoiler alert, he didn't write a check. Take a moment and consider Mark chapter 2, verses 13 through 17. This passage contains the expression tax collectors and sinners, which shows up frequently in the Bible. Why do you think these two words are paired together? Mark chapter 2, verses 13 through 17 says, once again, Jesus went out beside the lake. A large crowd came to him, and he began to teach them. As he walked along, he saw Levi, son of Alphaeus, sitting at the tax collector's booth. Follow me, Jesus told him, and Levi got up and followed him. While Jesus was having dinner at Levi's house, many tax collectors and sinners were eating with him and his disciples, for there were many who followed him. When the teachers of the law, who were Pharisees, saw him eating with the sinners and tax collectors, they asked his disciples, why does he eat with the tax collectors and sinners? On hearing this, Jesus said to them, it is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners. Jesus' meaningful connection to sinners has remained one of the most memorable things about him. It's not uncommon to hear people who know very little about Jesus refer generally to his action here. But if Jesus had a soft spot for hanging with sinners, he could have spent time with anyone. He could have spent time with the Pharisees who questioned his associations in this passage. Did Jesus find certain sins more tolerable than others? The expression tax collectors and sinners was another way of referring to social outcasts during Jesus' time. Yes, many tax collectors like Zacchaeus and Luke 19 sinned by cheating people. But Jews had another axe to grind with tax collectors. They were viewed more as traitors of their own people for serving under the regime that oppressed them. There couldn't have been a more unpatriotic role to play in Jewish society. Similarly, we understand a sinner to be someone who did not live up to the standard moral expectations, but it was also used more broadly to refer to a class of people who generally did not heed some of the religious expectations of the time. All Gentiles are referred to this with this title in Isaiah 14:5 and Mark 14:41. Were there people in this group who actually sinned? Absolutely. But it is primarily being used in this passage to refer to a class of people. Jesus was hanging out not just with sinners, which he could have done by hanging out with anyone, but the lowlifes and social reprobates of society. What made the scene more provocative to observers was that Jesus invited this group of people into intimate space with him. Consider again with me the way that Mark explains why Jesus was eating dinner with this band of outcasts. In Mark chapter 2, verse 15, he says, "While Jesus was having dinner at Levi's house, many tax collectors and sinners were eating with him and his disciples, for there were many who followed him." Was Jesus at Levi's when Levi's friends showed up unexpectedly? No. Was Jesus invited to a tax collectors and sinners party and decided not to turn them down because he didn't want to be impolite? No. Jesus brought the party. Pay close attention. This band of outcasts was there with Jesus and his disciples, Mark says, because there were many who followed Jesus. And Jesus didn't hesitate to invite them in to share close space with him. It's reminiscent of Jesus' encounter with another tax collector, Zacchaeus, in Luke chapter 19:5. Before he ever repented of his misdeeds, Jesus walked up to Zacchaeus, who was perched in a tree, and said, "Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house." This is the kind of stuff that set the Pharisees off. This group of misfits, called tax collectors and sinners, were the most unpatriotic, unsympathetic, irreligious group of people the Pharisees could think of. And instead of cutting them off, Jesus invited them into close proximity and friendship. Can you imagine the position this put Jesus in? I recently heard a story of a couple that grew up in Vermont and decided to move to New Hampshire. Their parents stopped speaking to them because of it. Who would have known that crossing over from the Green Mountain State to the Granite State could end up being such a social catastrophe? When Jesus reached out his hand to Levi and invited him to follow him, it was like crossing the Mason-Dixon line. There was no going back. How was Jesus going to reach out to all people when reaching out to a few would alienate the rest? But the challenge didn't faze Jesus. Jesus chose to heal in the face of strict social boundaries by accepting the social cost and inviting outcasts to be his friends. Of course, that's easy for Jesus to do. It's Jesus, after all. I doubt there was a moment that Jesus paused to reconsider whether he should invite the tax collector to follow him. But there are moments that we will pause. So it's important to count the cost early. People may talk about you if they see you around certain people. People may accuse you of being involved in something that you are not. People may see you at the grocery store and turn around and walk the other way. It's times like these when we need to do an honest self-evaluation. How important are people's opinions to me? And am I willing to accept the cost to be someone who readily heals anyone? Revisit the last two verses with me. On telling the Pharisees that it is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick, was Jesus suggesting that the Pharisees were righteous? Mark chapter 2, verses 16 through 17 says, "When the teachers of the law, who were Pharisees, saw him eating with the sinners and tax collectors, they asked the disciples, 'Why does he eat with tax collectors and sinners?' On hearing this, Jesus said to them, 'It's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners.'" Jesus was an amazingly creative storyteller who came up with original, memorable quips. But not everything he said was original. The expression, "It is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick," was used in various forms before Jesus arrived on the scene. It was probably a well-known proverb at the time, and the Pharisees would likely have been familiar with it. It's possible they used it themselves. The metaphor was a powerful one because it offers a clear and accepted example of a group of people crossing a boundary to serve another group for the good of the world. Some have questioned whether Jesus was classifying the Pharisees as righteous and his band of outcasts as sinners by saying this. It's very similar to Jesus' parable of the lost son in Luke chapter 15, 28, where the obedient son expresses displeasure to his father for throwing a party for the disobedient son's return, when he had never been thrown such a party for his obedience. In both scenarios, Jesus isn't as concerned over which group is the most spiritually healthy. He is more concerned with the perceived spiritual boundary that we create between people and the bitterness that results when we see grace and mercy shown across the aisle. So Jesus didn't just invite outcasts to be his friends and accepted the social consequences for that. He exposed the hypocrisy of the boundaries we sometimes create between people. And if we're going to live like Jesus did, we need to be honest and acknowledge what some of our social boundaries are so that we are aware that we might be operating out of them subconsciously in any given moment. There's nothing wrong with being around like-minded people, but sometimes our preferences can turn into prejudices. It's easy for Christians to look at Jesus' example here and say, "I'm not like those Pharisees. I'm friendly with everyone." But I imagine that many of those Pharisees were friendly with some of those tax collectors and sinners too. They just weren't friends with them. They did not invite them and welcome them into their space. We should all take the opportunity to examine ourselves in this way. And the best way of doing so might be to consider how we view friendship. Is it something you find, or is it something you give away? If it's the first only, then perhaps there's a boundary there that God wants you to reconsider. Jesus crossed social boundaries and exposed them, but some of his followers seemed to encourage disassociation with certain groups of people. The Apostle Paul quoted the Greek poet Menander in 1 Corinthians 15:33 saying, "Do not be misled, bad company corrupts good character." Consider two other passages from Paul, 2 Corinthians 6:14 through 16 and 1 Corinthians 5:9 through 11. Based on these readings, do you think that there were some people Jesus kept off his friend list? 2 Corinthians 6:14 through 16 says, "Do not be yoked together with unbelievers, for what do righteousness and wickedness have in common? Or what fellowship can light have with darkness? What harmony is there between Christ and Belial? Or what does a believer have in common with an unbeliever? What agreement is there between the temple of God and idols? For we are the temple of the living God." 1 Corinthians 5:9 through 13 says, "I wrote to you in my letter not to associate with sexually immoral people, not at all meaning the people of this world who are immoral or the greedy and swindlers or idolaters. In that case, you would have to leave this world. But now I'm writing you that you must not associate with anyone who claims to be a brother or sister but is sexually immoral or greedy, an idolater or slanderer, a drunkard or swindler. Do not even eat with such people. What business is it of mine to judge those outside the church? Are you not to judge those inside? God will judge those outside. Expel the wicked person from among you." These two passages seem to be saying different things at face value. Let's take a closer look. When Paul says, "Do not be yoked together with unbelievers" in 2 Corinthians 6:14, he is using a word that appears nowhere else in the Bible. It's actually a combination of two words, different and yoked. A yoke was a frame used to control working animals. When two different kinds of animals were yoked together for work, it created a significant mismatch, making the work unmanageable. Paul is saying that unbelievers and believers working in intimate association create that same kind of mismatch. So God wanted believers to be separate. This could certainly apply to marriages, as Paul clarifies elsewhere, but Paul had in mind something bigger that probably included business partnerships. It at least included close friendships. Rod Dreher, a Christian writer and thinker, has recently been popularized for his book, The Benedict Option. In it, he champions a Christian withdrawal from mainstream society, to be somewhat cut off from it, in order to protect its value system after having lost the culture war. On the surface, it seems that's what Paul is talking about here. Is it time to hunker down and wait for better days to fully participate in society again? When we consider 1 Corinthians 5:9 through 13, Paul seems to encourage disassociation even more. In addition to discouraging close relationships with non-believers, Paul appears to discourage involvement with anyone who sins at all. The verb Paul uses here means to associate or mingle. If Paul is encouraging disassociation from all sinners, could he reasonably expect people to have relationships with anyone at all? No. When Paul calls out certain individuals and labels them sexually immoral, greedy, swindlers, and idolaters, he is talking about a group of people that habitually engage in and embrace those practices as a way of life. You don't call someone a plumber just because they fixed a pipe once. It's just as important to know that Paul is only talking about believers here too. He says, not at all meaning the people of the world who are immoral. In that case, you would have to leave this world. And then later he asks, what business is it of mine to judge those outside the church? So Paul is not encouraging disassociation with all sinners, only believers who engage in and embrace an evil practice in such a way that merits labeling them by their practice. We will revisit that prohibition in another session. But Paul's implication here is that believers should expect to associate and mingle with non-believers, that is, people of the world, even those that habitually and gladly engage in sinful lifestyles. How do those two ideas come together? Quite simply, Paul encourages authentic friendship with outsiders, but discourages close friendship with them because it is counterintuitive to do work with someone who is moving in a different direction. Jesus put this into practice too. He extended friendship to all sorts of people, sinners and social outcasts. But Jesus also maintained a close circle that was on the same path that he was. And that's an important distinction to make if we are going to understand this bold, audacious Jesus. He willingly crossed social boundaries and exposed them, but he also kept a close inner circle that lived out his mission as a like-minded support system. Our country has become more divided in recent years. Politics have formed fault lines separating parents and children, brothers and sisters. And the political vitriol is pushing people to extremes. Jesus' challenge to sit down with outcasts and confront tribalism is just as relevant today as it ever was. Perhaps it's time we listen to someone across the aisle without trying to convince them. Maybe it's time that we reevaluate some of the boxes we've put people in. God is inviting us to give more than a personal check. If we can uncover the lines we've drawn and label them for what they are, we will open up all sorts of opportunities to be a healer and build bridges to people we would have never expected.